So here's your wine fairy tale. Kid from Austria heads to Germany thinking life in wine and being a sommelier is the way to go. Not only finds the dream job, but finds the dream man in the kitchen, who then decides to drag her off to rural South Africa to work in a restaurant that doesn't even exist. So is the story of my very special guest on Dan Really Likes Wine this week, Johannes Richter. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Johanna. I always get super, super, super excited when I get down here. And I always tell your husband that it's because of his food. It's actually not his food at all. It's because you've got one of the coolest wine lists in the country. But also you have this absolutely infectious passion for wine. It's writ large of everything you do in the wine world. There's this beaming smile and love for everything that you pour, which suggests to me that this is something that's always been in the genes, always in the blood. Are you from a family where it was wine around the dinner table, where wine was something that you always really loved?
Yeah. So not in a hospitality point of view, but more in a like social hosting kind of style. I think if you grow up with very generous hosting families, it just is in your blood, and then it's very difficult to get away with it.
It's an interesting one to break to your parents, who generally are hoping one day you'll become a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or something they can proudly tell their friends about. Our daughter's decided she's going to drink for a living can be a slightly harder pitch. When did you start to feel, hey, this is actually something I'm more than just interested in?
So after in school, I started working in a restaurant and also family run, and he was in the kitchen, she was in service, and she was just an amazing kind of gastronomic foster parents for me, or foster mom in this case. And so just her passion, her excitement, her drive was just very inspiring with the family, actually. So I thought, oh, I think I might be able to do this.
And also in the country, I think it's South Africa, we don't really associate Austria with wine, maybe an occasional skiing holiday or large schnitzels and beautiful cities and old architecture. Austrian wine doesn't come across the suffering palate very often, and yet there is a very strong and very proud wine culture in Austria as a producer.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, as we Austrians tend to be very patriotic about Austrian produce, also, of course, now Austrian wines also very big heart. Place in my heart. Yeah.
So you've got the background of a country that loves wine, a family that loves wine. Right, you're all good to go. Johanna's going to make her career. Off you go to Germany. You find yourself in this 3-star Michelin restaurant. And then there's this guy peeling potatoes in the corner of the restaurant who somehow talked his way into a job he has no right to be doing at all because he's got no credentials. Was it one of those cases where sparks flew immediately, thought, oh, he does look rather nice?
Yeah. You know, I was not too much into wine involved in that point. So more like casual waiter, starting first time in a Michelin starred restaurant. It was so exciting and such an amazing place. And then, yeah, there he was. And I was like, oh, hi. Yeah, but so since I'm 13, I want to go to South Africa. And then when we met, he was like, yeah, I grew up in South Africa. I was like, oh.
The stars had aligned.
And then, his mom running a little hotel here. So I was like, oh, we should talk. Yeah, and here we are.
This all sounds rather promising. Well, at what point in that did you start to not just have this interest in rather good-looking South Africans, but also that interest in wine at a professional level?
It then came because it was just made sense. The more you dig into it, the more exciting, the more wines we tasted. I was like, no, wait, this is something I really enjoy.
Was there a light bulb moment with a particular bottle? Was there a wine you drank or a tasting you had where you went, hang on, this really makes sense to me?
Actually, yes. A beautiful wine from Priorat. It was Pedro Jimenez, skin fermented from Dominic Cuba. And this was just, wow, with its gorgeous pairing of hazelnut, celeriac, and bone marrow. Oh, it was so good.
The angels started playing harps as you drank it.
Yeah, it was very special.
We were talking about Priorat last night because it's one of my favorite parts of Spain. It's where Ibn Saadi, amongst other South Africans, has worked.
Yes.
Makes some terrific wine. So then you begin this wine journey. And it's a lot more complicated than many people realize, because when you're becoming a sommelier, you've basically got to have this masterful understanding of kind of every wine in the world, really.
Theoretically, yes. Yes. So, as we focus mainly on South African wines, so we focus a bit more on locality here. So, unfortunately, we don't drink enough international wines.
Had you had much South African wine at that point
Before.
before you came over here?
Yes. So, my first introduction to South African wines was actually Beaumont Hope Marguerite when I started.
Not a bad one to
Yeah.
start
Yeah. I was
with.
like, wait, I can work with that. Yeah. So, exactly.
So you come over, and I've spoken to Johannes about this a number of times. You have this opportunity to come to his home country, and it's all well and good to visit this country that from the age of 13 you'd wanted to come and see. It's a slightly different one to move your entire life to this little corner of KwaZulu-Natal and decide this is going to be home. Was it terrifying? Was it exciting?
It was very exciting, so just enjoyed the idea of living in South Africa. But then when we moved down, I was just blown away by this lush green, the friendliness of the people, the weather, the warm ocean, the heartfelt. Everything is so heartfelt here, and you have so many different people, different religions, different ideas of doing things, different ways of approaching things. And it just works. And I don't think there are so many places in the world where, especially like KZN, where you have so many different people just living together peacefully. And I think this is something really to admire.
I think I know the answer to this question, but are there any regrets of leaving Europe? Are you, because you do look 100% happy all of the time.
Yeah, so no, for us to be here, for the kids to grow up here, it's just, yeah, no, I wouldn't change it.
It is idyllic, and you get to do it not just in a beautiful surrounds, but also in this extraordinary restaurant. And together, you and Johannes have put together a place that is a restaurant of the year. It's won all of these extraordinary awards, and genuinely a big part of it is your wine list and the hospitality that you bring into this space. And you have this incredible team. I think of my wife and I, if we were trying to do something similar, we'd probably be in separate cells by the end of the first day. But you guys do just seem to have this wonderful chemistry, not just at a personal level, but in terms of how you run this place.
We were talking about this not too long ago, that we are really also, yeah, so lucky to have both the same passion, the same drive, the same. So when I get asked, so how's it to support your husband? I'm like, sorry, you mean to
You mean,
support my
what's it
husband?
like
You mean
to?
in our business? Oh yeah, it's
How does
great.
he support his wife?
Yes.
Because you've got this wonderful wine space and he does a bit of food on the side.
Yes.
Speaking of that food, he's completely mad in the kitchen when it comes to wanting to experiment and to bring in the delights of the KwaZulu-Natal culinary heritage, which makes it, I suspect, challenging, but also really cool for you as a sommelier, when he says, "Right, darling, we are doing chicken feet for dinner tonight. What wine shall we have with it?" There are not a lot of fine dining spaces where what's the wine to go with sorghum or dombolo or these great KwaZulu-Natal great African dishes that don't often feature in wine pairings and with wine lists.
So generally, I think same as with wine, so food is such a personal thing, and wine as well. And then as well, so the base that we do is very French, a lot of butter, a lot of very classic basics. But then to have this privilege to work with all these gorgeous ingredients from majority in a 100 km radius, so it's super exciting. But also took us time to find suppliers, to find the team to do all of this. But it's also, you know, South Africa is a country with so many different styles of wine, varieties, winemakers, and it's so much fun to pair because there's always something that you can engage with or something new coming up, something classic. You have this beautiful balance.
Well, what's been the most fun dish to try and come up with a wine for?
Oh, he did a dish with bushbeak, ukhoba, bananas, and mbuya. Then originally there was the idea to add an oyster, and I was like,
Enough, Johannes, enough.
what are we doing here? No, but then it turned out beautifully, and we paired it with a Semillon Chenin Blanc blend, which worked out beautifully.
And that's probably for people who are listening, just some really good fundamental advice. If in doubt, something with Chenin Blanc in or Chenin Blanc as a whole, it's really hard to go wrong with Chenin Blanc paired with food.
Absolutely, absolutely, especially in South Africa.
Indeed, as kicked off by your Hope Margaries experience many, many years ago. How closely do you guys work from a menu perspective? Are you part of that process in terms of, right, well, we've got to work out some wine going forward? So from the beginning, you're in there in that conversation?
So I think I am, but then I realized no, I'm not. Yeah. He has the whole menu in his mind, and then we sit together at the round table, chat through the menu, through dishes. And I think I'm quite spontaneous, but again, turns out I always need a bit of time to adapt. So when he then comes up with some of his crazy ideas, I'm like, oh, really, Johannes? Is this really necessary? Do you not think we could? And then he's like, no, just try it. And then, yeah.
You do, of course, have the resources of incredible wine, and as you've already alluded to, what we have in South Africa is remarkable, and it does give you this palate as a sommelier to draw from, because as a country, there are just not just so many grapes, but so many styles of those grapes and interpretations that give you as a sommelier so much that you can play around with.
No, absolutely. And also, I think also in the last couple of years, also the change has been much more site specific, much more terroir specific. So this also makes it beautiful and exciting to taste through the different parts of the country.
And there are so many, and probably one of the big challenges I think our winemakers face is not so much what to do, but what not to do, because there's not much you can't in so many of our wine areas. Within that, what excites you most about South African wine at the moment? Where do you think we're absolutely shooting the lights out?
Oh, it sounds so cliché, but the Swartland is just so exciting. I like the tension in wines, the freshness, the excitement, the acidity, the bit of funk that comes with it, but then still beautiful classic approach. So it's this beautiful combination of just so many, but I think also of many free-spirited people in this case.
That's a very good way of putting it. Artie Badenhorst, I hope you're listening to the show as we speak. The wine of the Swartland is terrific. It's wine that I really, really love. And it's wine that I think compares with anything in the world, as I do think South African wine stands up. But we can get a little parochial. We can think our wine is amazing because we are South African and very patriotic. You've had the experience in Europe. You come from the outside. You're very much now a South African, I feel, but you do have that rich experience beyond South Africa. Are we as good as I think we are?
Yes, without doubt. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah, I think if you compare it generally to the top wines worldwide, whatever this might be, if it's Burgundy, Bordeaux, if it's, yeah, Penedès or something. Especially the newer style of wines where it gets very site specific, because I think this is something that's important in food and wine. You want to taste a place. You want to feel a place. Because otherwise, it could be everywhere and anywhere. And this is something that makes it very special and very personal. Again, there we are. Food and wine is so personal, you know.
And do you think more and more people in places like Austria, like Germany, are understanding South African wine, are really appreciating what we can do?
I think so. And also, especially on a Chenin or a sweet wine perspective. But also, I think if you compare value for money for South African wines,
So there's a slight bugbear for me, because there's absolutely no doubt that you're right on that. But every time we throw value into the conversation, I almost feel we're slightly taking something away,
Right.
because our wine is so good. And I don't think, yes, I look at being in, I was in Madrid a couple of weeks ago, and there was the Grenache Noir from David and Nadia on a wine list in a top wine bar in Madrid, a city in a country where Grenache is a religion. And if they've bought in some South African wine, it must be amazing. Yes, it was one of the more inexpensive offerings. But for me, the simple fact that a South African Grenache was to be found in Spain on a wine list, that was the story to tell. Our wine must be that good. And the moment we understandably talk about value, because it is there, I think we slightly detract from some of our wine at the very top.
That's true, but maybe it also helps people to be less intimidated by it. because they're like, but then on the other side, they say, oh, it's cheaper. Is it actually that good? And it's such a pity because it's so delicious.
I think there are still people, and I look at the UK in particular, where South African wine belongs on the bottom shelf at Tesco's, and that perception is changing. When I find great South African wine, I just love to champion the fact, and then also quietly know that it's going to affect my credit card a little less than the bottle of First Growth or Premier Cru. It's a world of wine that we celebrate, not just in terms of your story, but also in a couple of wines. So I very, very strictly instructed you to bring one bottle of wine to the show. You never listen to anything I say. So we have two bottles of wine, and I'm very happy we do, because you've got two producers I adore. One who is particularly well known, one who's a little more left of center, a little more on the fringe, but has a great deal of fun. Let's start, not bring this up for those of you who are watching this, the great Peter Ferreira. And before we try his 2017 Rosé, which is a fabulous breakfast option, he is one of these great characters of South African wine. And it is so much the fabric of our wine. If I look at Bordeaux, you very rarely talk about the winemakers. You talk about the estate. You talk about the brand. Mm-hmm. Whereas in South Africa, it's so much, possibly because we're a bit of a younger industry, but it is the people behind the wine who drive so much of the narrative.
You know, that's actually quite interesting, because I feel South Africa is very brand affiliated, but especially in wine, it is so winemaker specific. What actually is so beautiful, because then we hear again, and I think also, food and wine, as I mentioned, like 38 times now, it's very personal. But the thing is also, when you host somebody, when you make a wine, when you make a meal, you put your best that you have into it. So it's your whole, it's your personal, it's your heart, it's your aura, your everything is just in this bottle of wine or in this plate of food. And I think this is so special then, to appreciate the person who did it. You know, it's also not just like, oh, it's a whatsoever, bloody bloop. But then to give this admiration to this person, you know? And I think winemakers and chefs are all quite similar. A bit of ego is everywhere, right?
No chefs in particular, of course, you'd be referring to. All right, as I pour some of this rosé, tell me why. I gave you the choice. You could have picked absolutely anything from the hundreds of thousands of bottles you have here at the living room at Summerhill. Why Peter Ferreira? Why this 2017 rosé?
So I met Jane, the wife, a couple of weeks ago, or months, and I was so blown away by her openness, by her kindness, by her drive, by her. It was so inspiring. And when we tasted through the wines, and it was so, you know, when you look after somebody, we're like, oh my goodness, because I'm a bit younger than them, let's say it. And then, you know, but if you see that.
70 years. Only kidding, Jane. Peter, definitely.
But to see how a husband and wife team create something that is so special and so niche, but still so focused, and especially the roses that were here, I was like, ha, flabbergasted. I was like, I can't believe it. This is so good. I was so excited to share it with you for breakfast.
Ah, well, thank cheers. You. And cheers. While we're drinking it, and I suspect there are not many people listening at the moment who currently have a glass of 2017 Peter Ferreira Bubbles in hand at the moment, of the rosé varietal, just as a simple wine. We still have many people, quite understandably, who will refer to this without thinking as champagne. We can't call it champagne because the friends in France get almost as upset as they do at Rugby World Cups. So we call it Cup Classique. What makes this special, and what makes it stand up to a champagne, to a great sparkling of the world?
There's this lightness. Oh, it's so good. I think it's so good.
It's ethereal. Oh, that's glorious.
You know, I think it has this beautiful, it has the texture, it has the creaminess, but then this awesome lightness that just, I think you have a lot, but maybe also because it's so beautiful and dry, it also makes it so lean and so light. Yeah, I just run away by this one. Sorry,
it, wine is one of those spaces where it is so easy to fall into the trap of sounding like you're an aspiring poet and talking about something that clearly can't have all of these things you're ascribing to it. And yet when you do drink this glass, it does transport you. It does take you into another space.
You know, they also really think that sometimes wine gets taken too seriously in regards of very intimidating, and this is what you taste, and this is what you smell, and this is what it should be like. But I think sometimes to describe it with emotions, it's makes it much more
and you do this again. We had a dinner last night, and I was watching you as you made your way around the tables, and there was this sparkle in your eyes as you were pouring wine for people, and you were so excited to be giving them stuff that you clearly loved and you clearly believed in. And that translates very easily, because people afterwards are coming up to me, and I know that their enjoyment of the wine was in no small part because they'd had this Austrian they couldn't get rid of, who kept telling them about this amazing wine and pouring more for them with his huge smile and his wonderful giggle, and please do drink it. And that's so important in the hospitality world. You have to, as a sommelier, make people realize that you're pouring them something more than just, I'm trying to sell a bottle of wine. You're giving them a story, you're giving them an experience, you're giving them the romance and the magic of this bottle.
But there's also something that before we started the living room, it was the aim at to, because very often in fine dining, especially, it gets very stiff, it gets very stern, it gets just very educating. And, you know, people come for a special occasion, they save up for it, and then they only start feeling okay after two glasses of wine. And I think that's such a pity, because food should be, you know, food is such a gorgeous bridge with connecting people and combining emotions, and this is also with wine. So just think a more casual approach sometimes makes it a bit easier.
Let's talk about that with food. I am somebody who loves pairing food and wine together, but I'm not somebody who's massively strict on guidelines. It's not, oh, it's this kind of food, it must be that kind of wine. And as you well know, I love serving two different wines to the dish, because they'll offer a different prism, a different gaze upon the dish that we are eating. So I shall ask you not for two wines, but for this wine and two dishes. Give me something that you might serve with this in the restaurant here once Johannes has come up with another crazy idea for a dish, but then also something that we might cook at home. People who are more in the fish finger sandwiches, and we're just knocking up something simple at home on a Wednesday night. What might those two dishes be that are going to go really nicely with this rosé from Peter Ferreira?
So on the restaurant side, I would actually pair it with our current trout dish. So it's this beautiful trout from the Bushmills River that we then slightly smoke over teffe. So it gets this beautiful nutty aromas. Then this beurre blanc, a bit of lime leaf. Not to forget that we're in the subtropics. And I think with this beautiful nutty butteriness, it will work beautifully in this case.
I ate that dish last night. I'm remembering it right now. I'm actually wanting it right now, immediately, with this. That's a really, really good suggestion. What about at home when you are not a multiple award-winning German South African chef, and instead you're somebody who's more used to having to throw frying pans away because they're now beyond redemption?
I think lasagna might work nicely with it.
Because
there's acidity, the cream,
and
we had lasagna last night.
If your ragu is really, really rich and you've cooked it down for hours and hours,
exactly,
and the bechamel as well, that's a really good call.
Hey.
Oh, and I do make a fabulous lasagna. Mm. All right, cheers to that. Well done.
Cheers.
All right. Okay, so for research purposes, if you're listening, that was me just making sure this wine is okay. I think it is. Then we've got some other one, and I'm fascinated that this is what you've chosen. This is who you've chosen. This is one of South Africa's wine mavericks. It takes us to the Swartland, and you've already told us of your love of the area, which is no surprise because it's hard not to love the Swartland. You've got this guy who makes these very hard to miss labels. He clearly has a lot of fun with his wine, but he's also very offbeat in his approach, in the way he makes his wine, and in his wine philosophy. And I can see exactly why he struck a chord with you.
Yeah, you know, I think generally, pet nuts are just so fresh. They're fun. They're natural.
Let me stop there for a second, because they're going to be people going, pet nuts.
What are you talking about?
What is, it's obviously some sort of animal. But what is a pet nat? Give us the simple version. What is a pet nat?
Like a natural fermented pavas that was...
So how would that then differ from what we have just drunk?
So it's just a single fermentation in a bottle and then gets the crown cork, crown top on it. And for Cap Classico champagne, you take the... You riddle it, zup, 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 and then the yeast slowly goes down.
So zup, 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 zup is actually the sound that it makes while it is...
while it gets turned.
That's the Austrian word for bubbles. Zup, 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 zup.
So then, yeah, the yeast goes slowly down because you want it clean, fresh, crisp, depending on style. And then you freeze it, open it up, the yeast comes out, and then you just top it up with, depending on how sweet, how dry you want it. And yeah, in this case... still disgorged, but then not so much yeast sediment, but still unfiltered and refreshing, light and crisp. A little bit of sweetness to it. But yeah.
So the two things with this before we taste it, one which you won't have heard happen or you won't have seen happen because they're already open. This just had a crown cap on top, which is normally the first half of a champagne style wine. The other is that this can be a bit hit and miss because you don't have the control that you would normally have in making the Méthode Champenoise style of wine.
Yeah, just so I think a bit of excitement, something. But yeah, I think Craig is.
All right. I pulled the first one. I'm going to ask you to pour the second one. And this is Testolonga. This is Craig's wine. Craig Hawkins, who's worked in Swartland for a long time. He's worked with all sorts of people. And he's also got very, very cool labels. And I do want to ask you about that just before we kick in with these glasses. At a restaurant like this, I know if you go shopping, the label, the stickers, the visual, the aesthetic is such a key part in wine sales. Will you often bring the bottle out, especially a label like this, and introduce it to people as part of here is the wine you're drinking?
Yeah, especially for pairings. I think it's very important to see what you drink. Because it's all part, you know, there's a lot of thought that goes into each bottle of wine. It's not just cool, let's put a sticker on it. And I think it's also part of the whole wine experience. And I think especially in a wine pairing, it's always very exciting to get to drink wines that you maybe wouldn't drink a bottle of, or maybe probably would in this case. But just to experience different flavors, different aspects of wine, yeah.
All right, the El Bandito, let's give it a slug. Pet Nat. Oh.
And Colomba, in this case, what's nice and crisp.
Which adds to the cool South African story, because Colomba is finding its feet beyond just being a cheap brandy grape. There's that little bit of sweetness, not a cloying sweetness, but it's just giving you
almost like a refreshing cider.
Yeah, that sort of slightly sweet fruit, but it's got that tang to it as well. And that it does equate rather nicely. That is a lot of fun. Is this something, when you tell the story of this wine, when you pour it, will most of your guests be inquiring? Are people wanting to know more about the wine that you're giving them?
I'm not sure if they want to, but they get the story.
So they have no say in the matter.
It's not really their option, yeah.
Right. No, so. It was your 20-minute introduction from Johanna on Wine One tonight. perhaps I rephrase the question ever so slightly. Are you finding that people are coming to dinner, and it is a fine dining institution. It's a restaurant of the year. It's a chef of the year. It is very much a destination restaurant for those who love fine dining. Are you finding that your guests, your customers, have a greater interest in wine, more knowledge about wine? Are the conversations becoming far less entry level and far more educated in how they play out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, but generally, so our main guest clientele is KZN based. And I think very often KZN in Durban very often underestimates itself. So when we started, we were told, guys, this is not going to work in Durban. Durban people, they don't do fine dining.
I did assure you of that many times. You didn't listen to me, thankfully.
And I think, you know, there are people with gorgeous wine cellars here, private wine collections, tastings, vintage depth. So yeah, it's really it's fun. It's really also beautiful and inspiring to have our wonderful guests and chat with them through wine.
You and Johannes have created something quite extraordinary here, and the accolades that you've won are a testament to that. and you've definitely made it, so to speak, but the journey is certainly not finished, and I know there's a lot that you guys will continue to do. For you, though, from the sommelier perspective, from the wine loving perspective, from the great champion of South African wine that you are, what is still to be done? What would you still like to be done? What would you like to see more of when it comes to South African wine?
Any questions here? I think this is a stupid question, Dan. Damn it.
Don't hold back, Jana.
I think we're already on a very good path in regards of locality, in regards of terroir, in regards of site-specific selection. But I also think that it will, with the climate changing, it will also be a big change in South African wines as well, much more to like Grenache Noir style, less to Cabernet Sauvignon. Because I think the weather change will just demand change. And I think, you know, change is always good, I think.
I will ask in closing for a little bit of nostalgia as I take you back to that time in Berlin and this wide-eyed waitress. If you had been told as this pretty much still a kid out of Austria, finding her feet in the world of hospitality, spotting this good-looking South African in the corner, that not 15 years or thereabouts later, you would be
Den.
10 years, I forget, yeah,
Sorry.
she's 26 this month,
I
that you would be in South Africa as one half, and I say that very specifically, one half of the success story that is the living room at Summer Hill. I would be very surprised if anything like that would have been on your horizon at that stage.
think our aim, of course, oh, everybody, you know, when you start a restaurant, you want to create something special. And I think also we were very idealistic. And then when we came down here, I realized that we might need to adjust, amend our idealistic thoughts a little bit, because things tend to take a bit longer in South Africa, especially in Durban. And also from a team perspective, you know, like being a waiter, it's like a 3-year apprenticeship in Austria and Germany. And in South Africa, this profession doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
So I was like, what? And I think our aim from being much more, no, our aim was always give back, sounds so stupid, to enlighten, to give the spark of hospitality to, because we're very passionate about what we do. And if you see people working with us for quite some time, and then you see they understand the excitement, they understand the ambitions. And when you see that the spark has jumped over, I think this is something that's very rewarding and was, I didn't have on the radar before we came here how rewarding this can be and how much patience it might need to be.
And large doses of both. Jana, thank you, not just for being on the show, but you have added such a rich dimension to not just this part of the world, but I think South Africa as a whole, bringing this effervescent love of wine and translating it into a South African platform. And you've given so many people such joy by giving them wines they might not have expected, but have discovered that are as wondrous as they so often are. So thank you for that. And I look forward to many, many more glasses of wine together and many great meals as well with that chef whose name I can't remember.
Perfect. I will let you know.
Cheers. My very special guest on Dan Really Likes Wine this week, the Austrian who went to Germany and ended up on the side of a hill in Durban, Jana Richter, masterful sommelier and a great champion of South African wine.